Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Arizona Good Business Radio, featuring leaders in the Arizona business community working to build a lasting impact throughout our state through doing good business. I'm your host, Thomas Barr, the Vice President of Business Development at Local First Arizona. We are a statewide organization advocating for and celebrating locally owned businesses, and we're the largest local business coalition in North America, providing resources to over 3,000 small businesses and raising awareness of the benefits of building a strong local economy. I'm very excited to have back today someone that's been on our show before, but also introduce someone new to everyone today through our partners at First Things First. I'd like to introduce Liz Barker Alvarez, the Chief Policy Advisor, and welcome her back. Liz, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Thomas.
And new to the show today as a guest, we have Jared Cook, the owner of Raising Arizona Preschools. Jared, thanks for being here.
You bet, Thomas. Thanks.
Awesome. Well, childcare issues is something that's really obviously just an important issue in general, but from a small business perspective, from a business perspective, even more important, given the current times that we're in, especially. Liz, last time you were on the show, about 6 months ago or so, you know, we were just in a crisis with our state's childcare system. Early learning providers throughout the state closed due to COVID, unsure when things would be reopening. I mean, just 6 months ago, it was a different world or so. Let's get an update from you. Where are things at right now with our state's childcare providers and childcare in general in Arizona?
Well, I think the good news is that things are getting better slowly. The last time we talked, only about 81% of the programs that we were dealing with had even reopened. It was about only 50% at the height of the pandemic. Now about 92% of the programs are open and serving children in person. And that is really encouraging. It's a testament to the hardiness of the providers, and it's also a testament to some of the assistance that's been provided. But the open and closure rate kind of belies a little bit of a deeper issue. The Arizona Association for the Education of Young Children recently did a poll of its members, and in the state of Arizona, providers indicated that they were operating at about 73% of their enrollment capacity, but that on any given day, only about 39% of children were actually attending. Wow. So I think that it points to an underlying ongoing instability in the system that is directly tied to what's going on, both with COVID and in the economy.
Wow. Yeah, those are incredible numbers to think about. To kind of give us a grounding and remind our listeners, what is kind of the landscape of childcare providers in Arizona? How many do we have, and do we have enough? And what does that kind of look like?
So there are roughly around 3,000 providers throughout the state of Arizona, and that's a pre-pandemic number. I have to tell you, even then, it was not enough. About half of the state of Arizona pre-pandemic was in what's called a childcare desert, either meaning that there is no childcare in their zip code or that there are about 3 children for every childcare slot. So we were definitely facing a childcare shortage even before the pandemic. So this critical bit of infrastructure for the business community was teetering to begin with, and COVID hit it really hard.
Yeah, absolutely. I was speaking to a business that's been a partner and member of Local First for many years recently, who has about 60 or so employees. And, you know, he was stressing to me how even pre-pandemic, right, childcare was an issue for their business. You know, should a worker or somebody on their staff have a child they need to take care of and have to call out? But even more so now. And what it's caused is a huge strain on small businesses, because now you have the owners who are less focused on running their companies and needing to fill in and fill gaps and, you know, this whole workforce issue. And so, Jared, I want to move over to you and ask a question, because not only are you providing childcare, you're also representing a business providing that childcare. What types of challengers as a childcare provider did you really have in you know, that phase of reopening? What resources were there for you, and what were some of the challenges and maybe even a breakpoint in going through that process that you remember?
Sure. There was a lot of breaking points all along the way, from the beginning till even now. Some of the early on hurdles from COVID were just getting the equipment, not quite knowing what to do, not having a lot of clear direction from DHS or really anybody on, you know, this was our first pandemic, all of us, I think. So we're just trying to figure out what to do with it. And the biggest challenge that even remains today and from the beginning has been staffing for us, because you realize a lot of our providers, some of them are older, some of them are younger. We have a variety of different teachers at our centers. And a lot of the older ones that are kind of the veterans of the industry saw this as a perfect time just to exit, retire early, or do some of those things. And then you lose a lot of your leadership and a lot of your core staffing. And then you had issues just not knowing who was going to show up that day. Because if you had a little cold, you weren't sure if it was COVID.
Right.
And especially during cold season, you got six or seven people with the sniffles who would normally just come into work, but then they have to go get tested for 2 weeks. And so you'd have maybe 100 or 200 kids show up at your center. And instead of having 20 staff to watch them all, you have 12.
Wow.
And then you got to start calling parents. And then, of course, they can't go to work. And this is exactly what you're talking about. It trickles right up to every single business across the state if you don't have a place for the kids to go. And at other times, it was difficult just to get toilet paper or the gloves. Costco ran out as soon as you could. At times, I was running all over town just trying to find gloves so we could change diapers and keep our staff safe, and just making weird masks out of whatever old shirts we had. So it was an interesting time to navigate. But again, the biggest piece that was hard, it's not like a Burger King or McDonald's where you can just work a little slower, you know, if you don't have staff show up. This is just critical. I mean, what do you do when you have 75 kids and two teachers that showed up? You have to call all the parents and just send them home, or navigate, and those parents are crying, I'm going to lose my job if I would miss one more day.
Sure.
And I know employers were a little more understanding during the COVID time, but they have their needs to do too. And so it was just a crazy time. And a lot of those issues were definitely breaking points for me, especially having three centers. When you have just one, you can kind of fill in a little bit. But when you got three, you're just too much toast and not enough butter. Basically, it was just a crazy time for me.
Yeah. And tell us a little bit more about Raising Arizona Preschools. You mentioned three centers. Where are they located? What were things like pre-pandemic? How many people were you serving, or children were you serving? And what are things like now?
Yeah, we have three locations. They're all on the west side of Phoenix and north in Glendale. We have each center's licensed for around 100 kids. So they're smaller. I have one a little bigger down in Tolleson for 150 kids. And pre-pandemic, we were serving about 80% of that. So about 80 kids at each center, and then 100 so at the other one. And during the pandemic, you just never knew whether you'd have from 20 kids to 60 or 70 kids. Mm. It just depended on the kind of the waves of COVID. And we've been in business for 12 years, and this is definitely one of the, by far, the craziest time in the industry for us. And one of the hardest things, again, was losing a lot of those key staff members, because they were kind of the core of the thing. We had probably six years of like the average employee at our sites was 6 years, you know, had been there 6 years. Not a lot of turnover, which is difficult in this industry. But during COVID, we had probably half our staff turnover. Mm. And a lot of them were the old veterans that were kind of teaching the young people. So now I feel like we got the blind leading the blind, you know. It's just lack of leadership. And that's been the biggest hurdle trying to come back right now still.
Right.
But that's what we're working on.
Well, our deepest thoughts go to everyone running these facilities right now. I mean, the strain, the mental strain, and the you know, the care, right? You wouldn't be doing this if you didn't care. So we want to be helping as much as we can, raising awareness about what's going on. Liz, I want to come back to you and, you know, from your perspective, first things first, advocating for childcare and all the work that you're doing, what kind of assistance was offered to providers as they were looking at opening up or even through COVID, you know, since the last time we spoke, what were some of the things that you were focused on as an organization?
I think the first thing that happened is that the early childhood system and its partners tried to be responsive to the immediate needs. So, I mean, we were flip paper and baby wipes and PPE and everything together from schools that were closed at the time and didn't need what they had, philanthropic partners. The Urban League let us put everything in a warehouse. People were driving their own cars down here and getting it out to locations just throughout Arizona. And I just, my heart goes out to Jared and to all our childcare providers, because if you can imagine somebody, you know, rushing out and being so grateful that you're giving them a box of gloves and some diapers. I mean, it was really difficult for them to keep going. And that was just the immediate need. Then programs like the Department of Economic Security and First Things First, we both fund scholarships to help low-income working families access care. We kept paying on our scholarships, even if the child wasn't attending, so that the providers would be able to hold the slots.
Oh, wow.
So they would be able to actually have capacity if the child were to show up. And I think that that was something significant that happened almost right away. Then, of course, there were three major relief packages that were passed. And in March of last year, the big one was used to say open enrichment centers. So these were childcare providers who could register to provide childcare for the children of essential workers. And they were paid a scholarship so that the children could attend as well. And then closer to the end of last year, when we spoke, Thomas, they had just launched a 3-month grant program, and about 1,800 providers were able to take advantage of that. If the program opened by the 30th of September, they could receive 3 months worth of operational assistance. And I think that really helped as well. In the meantime, since the last time we spoke, two other major federal relief packages have passed, one in December of 2020 and one in March of 2021. And those are being used for a variety of purposes. Actually, with the first assistance package, they also funded 3-month grants starting in June. For providers to do workforce recruitment and retention. But Jared can talk a little bit later to you about how difficult that is, even with the financial assistance. This latest round of funding from the feds is being used to improve the quality of settings. The bulk of it, about 75% of it, is used to provide operational grants to providers, monthly grants, through 2023, so that they do have a little bit of resources that they can count on while all of this craziness that Jared was just talking about with staffing and enrollment and everything, to provide a little bit of stability. They're actually called stabilization grants in the system. And that's only through 2023. So we're very hopeful that that can help with some of the stability, but there are definitely still ongoing issues. Jared was also talking about like not knowing what to do. So through PNC Financial, because we do have to talk about the fact that the business community did also step up, PNC Financial provided a grant to First Things First to establish a statewide hotline where any provider could call and speak to a nurse about the CDC guidelines and their specific situation and how do I implement it? Or, hey, this just happened. I wasn't prepared for this. How do I handle this? So that's another bit of assistance that was provided. And then First Things First also worked with the community to produce actual written guidelines for programs on how to implement some of the CDC recommendations, et cetera. So everybody's pulling together. We're trying to do the best we can. And definitely the federally funded assistance programs were a huge help.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're hearing from you and we may have heard a little bit as that was all happening. We want this assistance to help as much as possible. Jared, from your end, what has that kind of been like in receiving, you know, some of this aid? How has that helped you try to kind of solve some of these gaps in workforce? And what has that been like for you?
Yeah, it's been a wonderful thing, all the help. I just remember even a time during the middle of the pandemic, some of these First Things First coaches would come around almost like Santa Claus with a trunk full of sanitizer and toilet paper, which is like some of the things we really needed then. So that was a wonderful thing. Some of the other programs These workforce retention grants were great. I used most of those things for paying the staff that stuck around. I just felt like, hey, you stuck around through this pandemic. It would have been so easy to cut and run and just get on unemployment and make more money. But you stuck around for these kids, which was really a miracle that anybody stuck around doing that kind of work when they could have made more money just leaving. You know, they could have really done that. And so obviously fighting against that pull was difficult, but it was because the teachers had that love in their heart, you know. And some of these other programs have been fantastic for keeping us afloat, just a business operation, not having to worry if you have enough funds to just get through the month. Mm-hmm. So that's been fabulous. Some of the challenges with just throwing money at the problem. For instance, I spent thousands and thousands of dollars on Indeed to get 100 applicants to only have 8 show up, to only hire one person, to have them quit 2 weeks later.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? And so, like, this is the real challenge. You can throw money at it. But really, when we have 3,000 providers that are probably short, I would say 3 to 5 teachers right now, if I just were to average it out, you know, that's 10 to 15,000 new childcare workers that we got to recruit somehow and make this industry look as important as it really is.
Sure.
And so that's kind of the shift in narrative that we're trying to, me and Liz, I know, talked about a little bit. But yeah, we're grateful for these grants. We're a little bit scared that they're only for a couple of years to kind of get us through, because it is nice to see when people all of a sudden focus on childcare for a minute, and then it seems if things get a little better, it's easily forgotten again. But we're really happy with a lot of the assistance to help us get through. It's really been a breath of fresh air, a lot of different things. Doesn't solve all the challenges, obviously, but
right. It
pulls a lot of that stress off of the operational side so that we can focus on the kids like we're supposed to.
Sure. Yeah. Well, obviously we're not out of this yet, and there's a lot of issues to solve. Liz, you know, you mentioned assistance goes through 2023, I believe. What is that going to mean for childcare in Arizona in trying to solve exasperating issues like childcare deserts, especially in our rural communities where there's less options for these businesses who have workers who need childcare? What is that going to look like over the next couple of years?
Well, I have to tell you, in the short term, it is very concerning, because the poll I was talking about earlier, about 61% of the individual respondents were indicating that they were considering leaving the field. Mm. And 10% of the program said they might have to permanently close. Jared is absolutely correct. The assistance is absolutely wonderful, but it's very hard for him and other providers to hire individuals at a higher rate when they can't promise them that that rate will continue, you know, after a couple of years. I think another hidden issue that's it's a little bit in the weeds, but I don't think that people quite realize how little childcare providers actually make. Mm. You know, in this state and actually throughout the country, we actually pay people more to collect garbage and to wash and tend to pets than we do the people who are actually helping babies, toddlers, and preschoolers develop their brains and be ready for school, and who are the backbone of America's workforce being able to go to work. And that is actually the foundational problem. Mm-hmm. So Jared can hire someone and he can try to hire them at a higher salary, but he can't promise them that that's going to continue. And if they can make better money working fast food sometimes, that's very hard for Jared as a business person, or anyone as a business person, to be able to get through. So really we need to, the short-term assistance is wonderful. The system is so grateful for it. But our attention now needs to turn to some long-term solutions. How are we going to make this sustainable? Because at the end of the day, the research doesn't lie. Whether or not people are looking for a job, whether they can hold down a job, whether they complete a college education, and whether or not kids arrive at kindergarten prepared to be successful and start working their way toward becoming tomorrow's workforce, mm-hmm. really depends on this critical piece of infrastructure that most people have never considered to be the infrastructure of economic development. And it's the backbone.
Right. Absolutely. Well, one of the things that we're huge advocates for at Local First is motivating and encouraging small businesses to activate on issues like this. But a lot of the times, you know, I meet a lot of business owners all the time who feel like they don't know how, or they don't know, you know, they might feel uncomfortable, or, you know, what is advocacy? How do I raise awareness about what my business is facing and get it in front of the right people who can make some decisions or move policy forward to make some lasting change? So Liz, what can businesses do if you're a business owner listening right now, and you were to do one thing, or you were to activate tomorrow to raise awareness about what's going on, what are those things that businesses can think about?
I can think of two major things. Number one, as a business person, really invest in the time to learn how childcare and the lack of childcare is impacting your business. Talk to your current employees. Are they having trouble finding childcare? How is that affecting their ability to come to work, their absences? I mean, do the work within your own business. As you're interviewing prospective employees, find out how the lack of childcare is impacting them. And then that leads me to the second one. Tell those stories. Tell those stories to other business people so that everyone can start to realize, oh my God, we're all facing this problem. Tell those stories to the organizations that are supposed to be representing you in funding discussions, et cetera, your chambers of commerce, your business organizations. Tell that story and let them know that this needs to be a priority in their policy work, et cetera. And then, you know what? Business leaders are constituents of policymakers at all level, at the city level, county level, at the state level. You do not need to be a professional to speak to these people. You are their constituent. You can call them up and say, this is a problem that I'm having as a business owner and as a member of this community, and I want something done about this because I can't run a business. I can't contribute to the economy and to the well-being of our state if my folks can't come to work.
Yeah.
So I think that those are the two biggest things. Business has a voice. Use it.
Right. Absolutely. Well, Jared, to just kind of get some final thoughts from you, the other thing that we really try to drive home at Local First is how interconnected all these systems are, right? We don't just have the business community and the childcare community. If businesses cannot provide childcare for their workers, then there's a strain on everything that's happening. If we don't have high quality childcare being delivered to these kids, then they're not developing and receiving the training and the information and the care that they need to grow and thrive, right? So from your perspective, would love to just hear your final thoughts and really how this is all interconnected.
Absolutely. It's all so connected. You know, I came from the finance world into this industry 12 years ago, and I really was amazed at what these childcare workers were doing for the pay that they were getting. It was just unbelievable to me. And I couldn't believe that I could even find anybody that would be willing to do what they do for the prices that they, for the rate of pay that they get. It's just, to me, I couldn't believe it. So when me and Liz talked about like just changing, changing the narrative about like what childcare means to businesses and to the state, I came to realize that, you know, 90% of the child's brain is developed before we even send them to kindergarten. Mm. And a lot of who we are today, a lot of who you are, Thomas and Liz and me, was shaped by our first 5 years that we don't remember, that we don't even think about today. But these are the workers that are really writing the story, the first chapter in the lives of so many of us, of who we become. And if we can just shift that narrative about who they are, you know, they've been kind of a long lost and really just like a forgotten demographic, I think. Paid low, just not cared about really. And so if one thing I could just hope that would change from this pandemic, and that we could really look at not just who's essential, but what are we doing here? Like what's the story about what's happening with childcare? Mm-hmm. And really to invest our resources and time and energy where it's going to pay back such great dividends. If a child gets love and warmth and care and gets a a positive story written into their first chapter, like our whole society changes in 20 years. It really does.
Right.
And so for me, if we can just get the awareness that Liz was talking about through the business community, through the government, through everybody. I mean, everybody kind of knows this stuff, but it's almost like it's forgotten. You know, it's almost forgotten. Everyone who has a kid, they know that they're precious. And they know that you can mess them up or you can really set them on a path for success in the rest of life, depending on what kind of care they get those first couple of years. And now with 60, 70% of our kids in these childcare settings, why aren't we looking at what's happening there? Why don't we take a peek at it? Why don't we see if these wonderful childcare workers have the resources they need to just have a basic livable wage, to be able to not worry about the things that they worry about every day. And so for me, if we can just shift that story about what it is, about really what we're doing there, they're not just glorified babysitters. They're the architects, the future. They really are, because the future is our children. It's just a trite saying, but when you really get into the weeds of this business, you realize that it makes all the difference in the world to the life of a child.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you, Jared, for all you're doing and for all the work that your team is doing. We appreciate you, and we send you all the positive thoughts to continue forging through the challenges you're facing right now. Liz, want to thank you for all of your advocacy and efforts for childcare in Arizona and for all the work that you do at First Things First. So thank you both so much for sharing today and for being on the show. We really appreciate it.
Well, Thomas, we appreciate having us on. And Liz, thank you for inviting me. And it's been great.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tom. Absolutely. Well, we hope everyone listening today was inspired listening to leaders working to leave a legacy in Arizona through doing good business. We'd like to thank our sponsor today, Phoenix Business Radio X, for hosting us, and all of our legacy partners at Local First Arizona, including First Things First. This is Thomas Barr from Local First Arizona, reminding you that if we want to build a better place, we need to connect deeply with the local businesses that make us proud to call this place our home.